Support for WERU comes from the Abbey Museum, Maine's first Smithsonian affiliate, founded in 1928 at Sire de Mon Spring in Acadia National Park, and open year-round in downtown Bar Harbor with two locations and one mission, to inspire new learning about the Wabanaki Nations with every visit. More information at abbeymuseum.org.
It's 10 o'clock and you are tuned to WERU-FM, 89.9 Blue Hill, 99.9 Bangor, and streaming online at weru.org. Maine Arts Alive with your host Michael Donahue is up next.
And welcome one and all to Maine Arts Alive, and I am your host Michael Donahue. We have today with us some folks who have been here before, but it's an ever-changing theater, and it's an ever-changing audience, and I want people who perhaps have not met these two folks to meet them again. I have with me Barry Newport, who's the producing artistic director of the Penobscot Theater Company. Welcome.
Hi, thanks.
And Ben Lehman, who is an actor with the company and happens to be in the show that has just opened. Ben, you want to take a moment and tell us a little bit about that show?
Sure. It's called Dr. Cerberus, and it's running the next 2 weeks, Wednesdays to Sunday, and it is a fascinating little play. It's fun, it's funny, it's heartfelt. It's a coming-of-age story. It's about a young man and his journey to self-discovery and self-confidence, really. And it's about his family demographic and how much they love each other and the issues that they have in that journey to discovering how much they care about each other.
Now, what's the title of this again?
It's called Dr. Cerberus, and Dr. Cerberus refers to a late-night horror movie TV host that this young man, his name is Franklin Robertson, watches very frequently as an escape. And it also, Franklin wants to be a writer. That's his goal in life. And these late-night horror movies serve as an escape from some of his issues, but also to serve to fuel his imagination and stir his longings to be a writer and storyteller.
Now, you have the lead in this.
I do, yeah.
How was this to create a character with all those dimensions?
This was, going into this, I read the play a year ago. Barry gave it to me to read, just to read. She said, I think you'll really, really love this play. Please read it. And I devoured it. I think I read it in an hour and didn't put it down. And I saw a lot of myself in it. And then, so it was interesting to discover the things that I didn't connect to and the things that were purely Franklin and someone else's journey. But it's been a joy, really, to create this character and work alongside Barry. We've been working on this since July.
Really?
Yep. Franklin has a bit of a weight loss journey as well as a lot of things. He uses food as medicine as a child. And so Barry and I became gym buddies as well as, colleagues and, working on this play in that way too. So we've been working on this for a while, and it's really a joy to see it come
to life. It was
definitely
a unique way to enter into a play on the treadmill.
On the treadmill, yep.
But I ran a half marathon in the course of this, and I don't know. I think it's been really healthy in more ways than one for Ben and me.
Absolutely.
Cerberus is, for people who are a little rusty on their Greek mythology, Cerberus
as am I,
Well, I was too, and it took an English teacher at Hampden Academy who was like, oh, the three-headed dog who guards the gates of the underworld in Greek mythology.
Interesting,
It really took her saying that to me before I was like, aha! And it's difficult to produce a play whose name most people don't make that connection to, a play that is a Maine premiere. It's never been produced in the state before, and it's not a play that's produced that frequently. It was written in 2008 by the playwright is Roberto Aguirre Sacasa.
I'm glad you have pronounced it.
he's a very interesting writer. Not only is he Stephen King's most recent adapter of the most recent Carrie and The Stand, the TV and film adaptations, but also he's a writer for Glee. He is best known as a comic book writer. He's the CEO of the Archie Comics, specifically Archie Underworld Comics.
Underworld?
Yes.
Archie goes zombie. It's really cool, actually.
It has a huge following, and he's a really interesting writer. The piece is very fresh and fast-paced. It's a very unique piece, and I'm really glad that we're doing it.
When you make up a season... What are you looking for? What factors become part of your decision making?
I usually base a season in five different ways. One is part of our mission is to produce a wide variety of work. We serve a large demographic full of all different kinds of people, and we have a subscriber base of close to 900. Something like Ring of Fire, appeals to a lot more people than something like Dr. Cerberus, which appeals to just a different group of people, mostly because they haven't heard of it. I think that if people came to it, they would really love it. It's a lot different. It's a more sophisticated piece. Of course, our Christmas shows, appeal to a large family demographic, right, which is also really important to us. So I look for a wide variety first. Second, number one rule of producing is know your audience.
Right.
And like I said, we have a large and varied demographic. That's Penobscot Theater Company has been producing for 42 years in Bangor, in downtown Bangor. And in that time, we've, attracted people in 3 hours in every direction. Someone from every county in the state subscribes to Penobscot Theater Company. I try and figure out, are the majority thinkers or feelers?
Yeah.
And it's interesting here, I think, because our demographic is so wide, I think we have a variety of people who hear from their heart first and people who hear from their heads first. So I try and choose a variety of plays that will speak to either and both. I think about what can we do well? Yeah. We are in the last remaining opera house in Bangor, the Bangor Opera House. Bangor used to have between 7 and 9 opera houses.
Really?
It was called the Little Broadway of the North, and all of them sat upwards of 2,000 people, including the Bangor Opera House. So we are on the original floor. Mae West performed on those boards, and it's a hemp house, meaning anytime we have to fly something, it takes pure brute force to get things up and down. So when we decide to produce something like Annie or Wizard of Oz, those designs have to...
accommodate that.
Well, they have to include the fact that we have no wing space, we've got no backstage, and those plays have huge casts and musician pits and dogs and where are all this and a lot of different scene changes. So what can we do well? And we have 10 people on staff plus 2 full-time interns, so 12 people on staff. And we make all of our own costumes. We build all of our own sets. Most people probably have heard that we purchased a firehouse, which is our new scene shop. Yeah. So what can we, this theater company, because we're not a venue, we're a company of artists who produce plays, what can we do well?
Right.
I think about what's going to be profitable. We are, of course, a nonprofit, but between 65 and 75% of our income comes from ticket sales.
Really? That's a good percentage.
It's a huge percentage. Yeah. And on one hand, that's great because that means that we have people who want to come to our plays. On the other hand, it means that doing something like Dr. Cerberus, which is a risk, A, because people haven't heard of it, and B, because it is a unique, edgy piece. It is, there's some language in it. There's some adult content in it. Although we've had a bunch of 13 and 14 and 15 year olds come to it and they just adore it because the language and the storytelling is so rich and fresh and modern. But how do you pay for something that's a risk, you know?
Absolutely.
And so putting together a season like the one we currently have, if you think of it in that way, it kind of unlocks the mystery of how a season is chosen. We try and start the year with something that's going to make sure that we have the funds to produce the Christmas show, because the Christmas show is usually the most expensive show in the season.
Yeah,
So something like Ring of Fire, we try and do a really, 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 really good job at producing everything we do. But I think we did a great job.
Now, that was your first show.
That was our opening show.
And it was gorgeous.
It was gorgeous and gorgeous. Well done and fun. Yeah. So something like Ring of Fire can certainly pad the accounts so that we can do something like Dr. Cerberus, and so that we're in a good position to do It's a Wonderful Life. Obviously, in professional theater, a lot of our bills and our expenses happen as much as a year before. And then we're taking another risk after It's a Wonderful Life, which I hope to see a lot of people that we haven't seen before for It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a radio play, right?
We're doing the radio play version of it, but it's not just a bunch of people standing in front of microphones. And actually, Ben is starring in that as well. No, it's going to be an immersive experience since we're in an Art Deco opera house. It seems only fitting to deck the whole place out and to make it an experience. It's
like
a live
like when they were doing it in the 30s.
Exactly,
and 40s.
That's exactly right. The ushers will be decked out. The box office, the concessions, and there'll be pre-show activities. And it's not just a radio play. It's a play within a play within a play, actually. We have two actors coming in from Atlanta to do it. We have an old professor of mine from University of Southern California who's a leader in voice. He's a vocal coach in Los Angeles. He is flying out in a week to direct it. And my dear friend Mark Chambers, who's here from San Francisco, starring in five roles in Dr. Cerberus, including the role of Dr. Cerberus, will also be in It's a Wonderful Life. There's all kinds of music in it. We have three musicians, and we're writing all the music. There's live commercials. It's going to be really fun. So
I'm talking with Barry Newman here, who's the producing artistic director of the Penobscot Theater Company. And she's accompanied by a gentleman who you will see on stage if you come to one of their shows, Ben Lehman. And we're talking about how you put a season together, which is kind of fascinating to me anyway. Now, as I see it, let's look at that whole season. Ring of Fire opened it up.
Yep.
And you're now in Dr. Cerberus. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, that's right.
Cerberus. It's a Wonderful Life radio play. Now, Hair Frenzy.
Hair Frenzy is another risk because, again, nobody's ever heard of it because it's a world premiere, which means that it's never, ever, ever been produced before. So the onus is on the theater company to give it a really great first shot out there. And it means that the theater company believes in it. It means that I believe in it, and I do believe in it. This is a play written by Travis Baker, who wrote our other world premiere hit 2 years ago called One Blue Tarp. Travis is a professor at University of Maine. And I went to a series of readings. I actually had another play in this slot, a Jeff Daniels play, which is also really funny. And I went to this reading of Hair Frenzy, and I decided to take the Jeff Daniels play out and give this one a shot. And, you know, the other thing I look for is we have an incredible team of company members who are also community members, artists, actors. And so I one of the first things I do is look for ways that these people can perform in great roles every season. Dr. Cerberus was chosen, incidentally, for Ben. So Hair Frenzy has an incredible role for A.J. Mooney. And it's really important. If we don't develop new work, then who will? And both of Travis's plays, this one included, that we've produced, focus on Maine. And not just all of Maine, but specifically this part of Maine. And so who's going to hold up the mirror to our community more than our community? And it's Travis is a great writer, especially a great writer of very fun dialogue.
And I love what I love about Travis's plays. And I was able to participate in a reading of Hair Frenzy, and I came into it fresh, is that it really, really does feel like home. You know, I grew up in Washington County and now work and live in Bangor. So, you know, I'm a Maine boy. And this really feels like One Blue Tarp felt like my backyard. And I love that. And Hair Frenzy is hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious.
It's totally funny. It takes place in a small town named Clara, a fictional town in a very small hair salon.
Well, let me ask you this, Barry. Now, you're talking about taking risk. This seems like a taking risk season. There's not our town in there somewhere or something like that. Do you see it as a risky season?
It's interesting, as every year, this is my fourth season that I've chosen, and every time I choose a season, I and everyone around me is like, oh, that's the greatest season, that's the greatest season. And then when I'm in the season that everyone was like, that's the greatest season, I'm like, oh, it's so risky. Every year I feel like that, including years that have Our Town in it, which in my opinion is also a risk in its own way.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes doing the, you know, if you read books about arts organizations in crisis, which luckily Penobscot Theatre Company is not in crisis, but the trick is always to go more risky, not more safe, you know? Because your core followers trust the company, believe in the company, and are in it for the risk, are in it for the unique experience, you know?
But at the same time, every Christmas you do, if not Christmas Carol, something like it, do you not?
Well, we haven't done Christmas Carol in years now. For 25 years, the company did do Christmas Carol. And
I guess I'm thinking of Portland Stage, which always seems to do Christmas Carol.
Yeah, and like I said, for 25 years, Penobscot Theatre Company did do Christmas Carol every year. And I think coming from Atlanta, where we did Christmas Carol at the Alliance Theatre every year, a beautiful, very elaborate production, I think that in some ways doing Christmas Carol kind of elevates a city or a community. You know, and so I think there's real value in it. On the other hand, my take has been to do big family-friendly musicals for the first time. We did Annie for the first time. The company did Wizard of Oz, and in ways that those are risks too. Those really challenged the company. And next year we'll probably do another big musical that I have my eye on. I was just kind of approaching just the whole Christmas season in a fun, very inclusive way. I grew up Jewish and didn't grow up with the innate attraction or nostalgia associated with Christmas Carol. And so I think that might be part of it, just to be completely honest. But, I mean, this year we're stepping back into classic tradition with It's a Wonderful Life, but the way that we're doing it, I think, is going to be a unique, modern, fresh experience.
We have this neat thing that happens in Bangor downtown at Christmas time, too. We have a Christmas parade, but people come and shop local downtown, and Penobscot Theater is always a part of that in our Christmas slot, you know, where families are joining us as part of their holiday experience, not just Christmas, but like holiday experience. And we did hear for several years in a row that people were tired of Christmas Carol. We were like, you know, we want something new, but we want something we can. And it just seems the appropriate time to do that family thing. And I'm really glad that Barry has chosen to elevate that slot in that way. It's special for us as actors too. We get to spend Christmas, the holiday, in a really special way. So.
Yeah, and some actors have spent the last 12 Christmases with the theater company, which is interesting. We've also expanded our Christmas show. We end right before New Year's Eve, and we do a New Year's Eve show now too. We're we haven't fully publicized this yet, but we're doing a Janis Joplin show on New Year's Eve this year. It's what we ended this past season with. It's called A Piece of Her Heart, and it's this incredible woman from Indianapolis who will be performing two shows on New Year's Eve as Janis Joplin.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ben, I want to go back to you here for a moment. You said you read this play and you really loved it.
I loved it. I read it a year ago and I said, geez, I'd really like to direct this play someday.
Okay. As an actor, what do you look for in a script that makes you say, I want to do this?
I want to be challenged. I want to do things that I've never done before. And this role challenged me in a lot of ways. It challenged me to be vulnerable. And first of all, I never dreamed I would play this role. When I read the script, and I didn't see myself in the play. I saw myself, you know, painting that world maybe someday. And when Barry suggested that I play Franklin, I went back to it and looked at it with those eyes, and I thought, geez, this is going to be a real challenge. Vulnerability-wise, Franklin's terribly vulnerable, he's vulnerable the whole time. He's, you know, you really see the guts of this character. I think you see the guts of all the characters. So that's what I look for. I look for a challenge. I've done a lot of musical theater. I grew up on musical theater. And as I moved out of my 20s and through my 30s and I just turned 40, I look for things that challenge me in a different way. And this really has been a challenge for me as an actor in a lot of ways, but mostly vulnerability.
Interesting. And it's often said that rehearsal time is the time in which actors are basically naked and evolving in that time. And it's this very special time.
It is. And this rehearsal process, we did a lot of experimenting with how these scenes were going to work and who these people were and the best way to temper the play. I think Barry's done an amazing job of discovering the pace of the play and how best to present that to the audience so that they stay with us and they stay connected to us.
It's a comic book.
It is. Yeah. And it's a difficult world to paint. It's a difficult play to direct. As a director stepping outside of that, I can see that it's a difficult piece to put together and to get just right so that the story is represented well.
Yeah, I have to say that was a surprise to me. I didn't know that it was going to be a difficult piece to stage and a difficult piece to figure out. Because I too really, it's a great piece of writing and it attracts you to the story immediately. Yeah. It's very engaging, but it's a difficult piece to play, I would say. Yeah. I think we've done a good job, though.
It's smart. It's a smart play. Yeah. Like, the writing is very intelligent and
funny,
smart.
And very funny.
And funny. And that's something else that I look for as a script that really grabs me that way. I have a literary heart. I'm kind of a lit geek. And to see words on the page that really leap out and I can attach to immediately, that's when I know I want to do a play. When I really want to be involved in it. So,
does your choice involve being scared?
Is the material challenged? Yeah, well,
and that can be scary.
Yes, it can be. And there were scary things going into this. There were things that I think that I said after our first full run through. I grabbed Barry and said, "I'm terrified. I'm not sure what the next step is." And, she was just like, just roll with it. Just trust it. You'll find it. And we did. But that's the other thing is that the play for me, you discover a ton in rehearsal, of course. But for me, it's also that journey in front of the audience. The play never stops evolving. And you can feel my favorite part about being on stage is feeling the audience when they're there with you. Whether they're receiving the information or they're not receiving the information, you can feel the energy, and it's a neat feeling, but it also changes what you do, and how you perform and how it informs your character.
That's why I think every production of any play is always new.
That it's true, and it has to be new for us as actors. We have to. That's one of the challenges is to keep it fresh every time you go out.
They say, you've heard it 20 times. That member in the audience has heard it once.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
There's some more of the season here, Barry. We got, I think, down to the last 5 years.
so we do this world premiere called Hair Frenzy, and then right behind that we do the small musical, The Last 5 Years. I was, first of all, I know this community loves music. I know the community loves music. I love music, too. I was looking for something for Dominic Varney, and I was also looking for something for Brian Beck, and I was looking for a small musical. And I knew that they really wanted to do this, and sometimes that's a good reason to choose a play as well, to support your community of actors. It's a fully sung musical, which we haven't done since I've been here anyway. And I was also looking for a way to involve the symphony. The music director, Ben McNabe, is someone that we haven't worked as closely with as we will on this project. Michelle Colvin will direct. Michelle directed Ring of Fire and Wizard of Oz and has recently moved to Bangor.
Because
she loves it so much. Well, it's a great honor for the community to have someone as experienced as her. And so The Last 5 Years will be directed by her and star a bunch of people from the symphony. It has a beautiful symphonic score. And then we're doing Duck Hunter Shoots Angel.
Yeah, I want to hear about that one.
Yeah, people love the title. And that is by Mitch Albom, who wrote Tuesdays with Maury. This is his only other play. And
really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's a really lovely, beautiful, funny, sophisticated kind of story about a tabloid writer who finds himself in the backwoods of Alabama covering a story about hunters who accidentally may have shot an angel. And in while covering this story, which is very funny, he discovers things about himself and his own past.
Interesting. Once again, for you folks listening, I'm talking with Barry Newport, who's the producing artistic director at the Penobscot Theater Company, along with one of her actors, Ben Lehman, who is in the current production and evidently does a lot of acting for the Penobscot Theater Company, which is great. You get the feeling in listening to Barry and to Ben that it's not a theater that actors move through, but it's a theater where actors stay and work. And I think that makes a huge difference in the relationship between the theater and the audience. So I commend you. There's some other aspects besides what happens on stage with the Penobscot. And one of them, you have a dramatic academy. Can you tell us a little bit what that is?
Sure. I mean, from the beginning of Penobscot Theater Company, from almost the beginning of Penobscot Theater Company's creation 42 years ago, we've had an educational component to the organization. You know, really what any theater in any community is a center for imagination. And it's really important to feed that imagination, both as adults, but also, of course, as children, and to put real value on one's imagination. I sometimes quote the beginning of the 9/11 papers, you know, which say we never could have imagined.
Yeah.
Well, that's what we do. We imagine. And so our Dramatic Academy in 2015 is multifaceted. It includes 5 youth productions. In fact, this weekend, Ben is directing something called Shuddersome with our director of education, Amy Rader, who's incredible, an incredible woman, who's also in Dr. Cerberus, a very funny actress and writer, who has been performing with Improv Acadia for the last 10 years and has also moved to Bangor to work at the theater. It's a great honor to have these artists coming into our community. It's an exciting future for Bangor, too. And so this weekend, they're sharing the set with Dr. Cerberus. They're in tech right now, and there are over 20-some kids involved.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do 3 large-scale productions with Dramatic Academy during the school year. Then we do 2 large-scale productions in the summer. We'll be doing a musical, and then we'll be doing a really interesting project with Acadia National Park and the Penobscot Nation, which I hope to come on and talk to about, a piece that we're creating with the nation and the park and kids. And then we have all these adult classes that have been very, very popular, and we have a very exciting teen class that happens every Monday night. I don't know, Ben, do you want to speak to any of this?
Sure. We also go into the schools. We do something called Shakespeare in the Schools, and we take the works of Shakespeare in a workshop format and go into classrooms and do workshops with Shakespeare's language.
Uh-huh.
We are doing Shuddersome Tales of Poe with the kids, and there are 6 of his famous pieces. And we're also doing Harriet the Spy and Fantastic Mr. Fox this year on our main stage. I'm really, really excited about the shows that we have. It's a treat. We have a company of kids. Again, they return time and time again to not only learn about acting skills, but to become part of our company. And they're part of the fabric of our theater. And it's really a treat for me to be their teacher. They're great kids, so I can't wait to see them.
What are you looking for age-wise and some skills?
We have slots for kids from ages 4 to 18 in our Dramatic Academy. In the summertime, we open it up to ages 20 to 21. We usually do one huge scale musical production in the summertime. This past summer, we did The Wedding Singer, which was a smash.
Yeah.
Smash hit. People loved it. And we did. We had kids from 4 to ages 21 in that cast.
And we have adult classes. We have Amy.
Our improv class.
Yeah, our improv class is huge. It's a hugely popular class.
So they just call the box office if they want to.
Yeah.
Or you can call our offices and talk to Amy too.
And what's the number?
The number is 207-947-6618.
Say it slower.
207-947-6618.
Okay. You also have master classes, which I want to talk about. We've kind of started to talk about, but I need to do an ID here. We are WERU, and the show is Maine Arts Alive. We are 89.9 in Blue Hill and 99.9 in Bangor. We are a unique member of this community. We are what is called community radio, and I think in many ways community radio at its best. I'm going to open phone calls, time for phone calls. If any of you have something that you want to ask Barry or Ben or want to contribute to the conversation, please give us a call. Here's the numbers, 469-0500. Let me say it again, 469-0500. Or you can use 800, which is 866-625-9378. And you can also come into our website and ask a question through there if you want. Okay, back to Barry and Ben with the Penobscot Theater Company. And again, I invite you all to give us a call. Before I return there, just three things I wanted to mention quickly. There's actually a new magazine that's come out, and it's called Take Magazine. I'm not trying to sell the magazine or endorse it. It's just another way for the community to know what's going on in the arts and crafts. It's the Take Magazine. And just go to www.thetakemagazine.com. Also, the Community Foundation has invited teachers in Penobscot County and Washington County public elementary schools to apply for support to bring arts into their classroom. This money is coming from the Minsky Fund for Arts Education, and the guidelines and so on can be found at the Maine Community Foundation. Maine Community Foundation serves our state in so many wonderful ways. This is yet another. So if you're a teacher in one of those schools, good opportunity here. And lastly, I want to compliment the city of Bangor for having created that month-long celebration of the arts and cultural events. Unfortunately, I did not get the notice in time to mention it before the month, but I want to thank them for being so supportive. It's a monumental task to fill a whole month. Okay. Back to our guests, and we said we wanted to talk about the master classes.
Yeah, it's part of our Dramatic Academy as well. Yeah. Our Dramatic Academy is really the whole arm of our educational programming at Penobscot Theater Company. Dramatic, the master classes, I think this is our third year of offering them. We're bringing so many artists in from other states. It only seemed rational to allow those people and the community to get to know those people by those people sharing their skills. And it's not just artists that we bring in. It's also our local artists who also are part of our roster. But our next one is this Saturday, the 31st, and it is being hosted by Mark Chambers, who I mentioned earlier from San Francisco. He has done, for the last 3 years, this is his third one, called Creating a Character. And those are hugely popular. We usually have up to upwards of 25 people in those classes, and they're only $25 for 2.5 hours.
Oh, all right. So creating a character. Let's take that for example. What happens? He gets a Mark, is that his name? Is
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah. He gets up and talks about it, and then...
Well, they're workshops. They're not just talk. They're not like lectures. It's hands-on. That's the whole purpose of the class. Okay. They're actual classes. They're not... they're master classes. Okay. They're for people to delve into the craft of acting. And we also do some technical, we bring in a bunch of designers, very experienced people, and so we usually do one pretty intense lighting and costume design masterclass a year as well.
So you use a kind of a scene study approach, or how do the individuals participate?
Each one is different. Creating a character, I think Mark actually uses nothing, because uh-huh. Mark's version of creating a character, Mark creates characters usually from the outside in, but sometimes from the inside out. He's a master master of his voice and a master of costume and makeup and character development. And so I believe he walks people through his technique of creating a character. I see. And it's not always text-based.
Could you explain for the audience what you meant by inside out and outside in?
Sure. Some actors, and it's not as cut and dry as this, but the shorthand is some actors, put on a hat and teeth and a nose and begin their character creation literally from the outside in. And some actors figure out the emotional components that create the person and go from the inside out, both to transform themselves.
Are you? Which are you, Ben?
I'm more inside out. I would say, but I mean, it depends on the situation and the character too. It's a Wonderful Life and the character track that I have for that, I think it's going to be a whole lot more outside in for most of it. But with Franklin particularly, it was definitely inside out. I needed to know his guts first before I found his body.
There was a story of a well-known actor. I can't, unfortunately, recall the actor, but I think he was working with Breck or someone. And one of his props was this hat. And he kept going through hat after hat after hat, driving everybody nuts because he had to find just the right hat. Now, is this part of what we call outside in?
Yeah, but it's also just called detail work, and it's all in the details. I mean, I think people would be shocked to have sat in on one of our rehearsals. And from my perspective, do people walk in from that level or that level? Do they walk in? Do they walk in faster? Do they stop? What kind of games do we have there? Do we really want Clue there? Do we really want the Game of Life? Do we really want a green pillow? How many pillows should there be? How should that blanket be arranged? Is that the right couch? Is that the right carpet? I mean, every single detail is thought through and talked about. And if you take then just the experience of the actor, it's, do I move my pinky here? Do I lift the cup here? Do I put it down here? Where do I put it down? Do I get up here?
Yeah. And it's so strange. I'm going to use, I played the lion, the Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz last season, last Christmas. And I started with one tail, which does not sound, you know, like you might think a tail's a tail, right? But that tail was my best friend in this show, and I had to hold on to it the whole time. And it was my blanket. It was a hanky. It was everything. And halfway through the rehearsal process, we switched out tails, and I was thrown for two or three rehearsals until I got used to this new tail. Yeah. It's so strange that, like, you become, as an actor, so attached to the things that you wear and that are on your body, and they become part of your character. Like, if we switched out Franklin's sweatshirts right now, I would lose my mind.
But if we switched tops right now, you and me, or if the three of us decided to switch,
yeah.
No, I don't know. I wouldn't feel like myself.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Everything that we do is our own character, you know, and costume, how we costume ourselves on a daily basis. Yep. The fact that we both have watches on is a choice.
I feel naked without my ring. Like, you know, it's just things that
make us.
It is true that actors do get attached to the things that they put on their body, and it really does become a part of the fabric of what you do.
Yeah. I'd love to have those of you out there who have a question or a comment to give us a call. The number's 469-0500. Again, 469-0500. 800 is 866-625-9378. Give us a call.
We do have a seventh show, too, that we just announced about a month ago, which isn't part of our subscription series. But people might recall that we did the Rocky Horror Show as part of our 40th anniversary 2 years ago. And we're really interested in trying our hand at the months of June and July again. And so this year we'll be doing the main premiere of the musical Rock of Ages. We'll actually be running it a little bit longer than we normally run our year shows. So really looking forward to that, too. That's a big, fat musical that will be really fun for the summer.
It's all 80s rock and roll. Mm-hmm. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Well, that should have an audience.
Yeah, and in the summer, it'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Now, Barry, you inferred at one point that choosing a season has its, you know, the things you look for. But the timeline on choosing? I would imagine at this point you may even be thinking about next season.
Oh, more than thinking about, we're budgeting next season. Uh-huh. We try and have everything done by January 1st because rights have to be applied for. And the budget, you know, it's a, even though we're on a fiscal year, our particular fiscal year starts September 1st. It's a continuous cycle. It's not like the theater ever stops, whether it's summer camp happening in the summer and there's, you know, 50 to 60 to 80 people running around, or whether it's something like Ring of Fire or Dr. Cerberus, there's always something happening. There has to always be something happening. So we plan, and we're a small group of people. And, I mean, just the casting process is a lot of, really back end work, a lot of administrative work. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into every single choice, that is made there.
You now at whatever point you start looking to the next season, do you try and make the season different than the current, or is there how do you balance out one season after the next and after the next?
Well, I mean, I try and challenge myself too, because if I'm not excited to get up in the morning, and if I start feeling, you know, resentful in any way of the amount of work that's not only on my plate but that is then filtering down to everyone else, then you know, it's an honor to do what we're doing. And so I try and challenge myself too and do things that I'm really interested in doing. And so, for instance, It's a Wonderful Life, you know, I'm really interested in creating an immersive experience, and I'm really interested in a whole 1940s world, you know, and even though I'm not directing that as producer, you know, I want to offer that to our community and our company. We're, like I said, we're a company of people. So I certainly try and create a lineup of things that are going to inspire us as well as our community.
There's a theater company down in Boston, American Repertory Theater, and which may not be as well known by the audience. Certainly the National Theater is probably better known, especially now with their ways of reaching out and performing in the Grant and so on. The ART, the Bernstein, when he was there, said at one time that he didn't want any play that they do to be anything but the greatest challenge for the audience to comprehend and bring into their selves, understand. He wanted every play that he does to be out of the ordinary. Do you find that as
absolutely? I mean, I try not to. I don't think of it as I want the audience to be confounded or to challenge to be challenged. Like I think that the thing that I think that I bring with me, not only to my work on the stage, Dr. Cerberus being an example, but is an element of optimism, hope, and fun. And I think that when Penobscot Theater Company's board decided to hire me, whether they knew it or not, I think that they were attracted to that kind of brightness. And that's just something that I bring with me. And so for me, I'm not, I don't really get off on challenging people in that way. I do get off on giving people an escape and a joyousness and a positive, hopeful kind of feeling that they can leave something with. And that's just something that I think I carry with me, and I think it's kind of evident in the seasons that I choose as well. Not that everything's poppy and pillows, but I think that even Dr. Cerberus, like, you leave this something that is a challenging play, is also very, very fun.
Yeah. Ben, there's an old adage or story about John Gielgud, and that was that he was in some Shakespearean piece, and it had a fairly extended run. So he'd been on stage with that character for, you know, dozen times. And he walks off stage and he says, you know, I finally understood that line.
Yeah.
Why is that so? What's the story with that?
You go into things and you explore the play as an actor, and you grow to understand most of it on one level. And there are some things that just never quite connect, and you never quite know why your character is expressing that at that moment. And you just, you go with it. And you make those discoveries as you go along. Sometimes someone in the audience will react, and it just informs you as to why that line is there. And it's a purposeful thing for the playwright sometimes, you know. And other times, it's just about that one person in the audience that had that reaction, and it turns over in your brain.
And sometimes it's a purely technical thing as well. That's, you know, right. So much of acting is
sometimes
technical.
Yeah.
And Mark Chambers, the actor we were referencing, who's giving the master class this weekend from San Francisco, is a master at turning his head downstage for the laugh lines. Even if they're not an obvious laugh line, he will deliver the punchline to the most obscure little joke. He'll deliver it downstage. And that's purely a technical thing, you know? And on opening night, we sat there at the bar, and we talked about a couple of lines in this, about why they work and why they don't work and how to adjust them. And we were talking, like, purely from a technical standpoint. But, of course, we also talk about, whether as a director or actor, why do I say this?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that unpacks everything before and after it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
But that sounds like kind of the Jack Benny approach, is to turn to the audience with their punchline. Is it that obvious?
No, it's not. But some things want that, of course. And, you know, that's a stylistic choice. No. And you would never notice this unless you were looking for it. As a director, I've just been so thrilled that so many more lines have been able to be really, you know, so much of acting is about being heard. That's really a big deal.
How do you mean that?
I mean that diction and how one supports their breath is a very, very, very large part of whether something works or not.
Well, certainly if the audience can't hear it or can't decipher what's being said.
Right. There's no storytelling if you can't hear the words.
That's a big deal. And when you're in an old opera house and when, you know, the actor's instrument is their body, it's not like we have a violin or a paintbrush. So it's a big, big deal. And so delivery and just the basic technique of acting is kind of showcased in our opera house.
And I think emotionally, too, you go into being an actor is a funny thing sometimes. You go in with your own set of experiences in life, and you have something that the playwright created as well with a certain amount of things in mind and in a certain degree of intention with their writing. And you have to marry those two things together sometimes. And discovering all of that is a journey, you know. And I think that sometimes you don't have that completed journey until the last night. It's really true. Or just there are always new things to find.
Do you find it different to work with a playwright in the auditorium during rehearsals or with a
I have had that experience very few times, but the few times that I have worked and the playwright has been present, I have been nerve-wracked about that. I would rather not have that experience.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I can confess that it's the same for the playwright.
I bet it is. Yeah.
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 Why did they put emphasis on that word?
Sure.
That's not where I meant the emphasis or whatever it might be. And then, of course, Barry, there's the director who's kind of, I'm not saying this right, in between the playwright and the actor and the final product.
You know, honestly, I sometimes think that because I was trained as an actor and I acted my whole life. And it's been 8 years since I've done like a full production myself. But often I've felt that I'm totally not needed, that the director really isn't. And I think about Shakespeare, and I think about, you know, there wasn't a director then, it was actors. I do think, though, coming from an acting standpoint and directing standpoint, the director's job is to see the full story, you know, and to interpret to their best of ability the playwright's vision, the playwright's story. From an acting standpoint, it's very important that you're kind of worried about yourself and worried about your own journey.
Yeah,
I love working with playwrights. I've spent a lot of time as a dramaturg and feel that I'm pretty good at developing story.
Now, dramaturg is the
study of drama.
Yeah, and the person who often gives an audience a look at the whole picture.
Sure, and not just the audience, but also, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a dramaturge on staff, the actors, the directors, et cetera.
This is you folks out there who have been tempted to call in. You better do it soon because we only have a little time left in this fascinating conversation. So if you want to interject, 469-0500 or 866-625-9378. Can you, at this point, reveal anything you're thinking of for the future?
You know, we've got a long season ahead of us now, so I think that revealing the Penobscot collaboration that will be happening this summer in commemoration of Acadia Park's 100th, the centennial of the park system, is uncovering one exciting rock that we have in our future.
Can you talk about it a little more at this point? Maybe not.
Have me on again.
Okay.
and the fact that we're doing this seventh show, which is quite an undertaking too. You know, these musicals require a lot of planning. And that we have this new firehouse. You know, it's a really exciting time in Penobscot Theater Company's evolution.
Do you, boy, that thought went right out. Oh, yes. What's the future for the company?
To become stronger and stronger. And obviously, the stronger our finances are, and they are pretty strong right now, the stronger the company is. And we just never want to worry about the future. You know, we're always worried about the future. We're playing a game of risk. That's the nature of the business, you know. But the stronger the community is, the more jobs, the more opportunity there are for people to and want to move to the community and live in our great community, the larger Bangor community, you know, the better the theater is, the stronger the theater is.
And so, as you said, the theater is a nonprofit organization.
We're a regional theater like every other theater, like Portland Stage, like the Public Theater in Lewiston, like the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis.
You're part of the LORT system. League of Resident Theaters?
Sure, we are. Okay. But the reason that we're all nonprofit is so that we can do things like Dr. Cerberus. Yeah. We could easily do The Wizard of Oz and Fiddler on the Roof and Steel Magnolias and things that people have heard of that would make a lot of money. But part of our mission is to provide our community with a wide variety of work. And so we take donations and grant support and foundation support so that we can continue our educational programs and to provide society, you know, a much needed avenue for empathy and imagination. That's why the American theater system is so different than any other theater system in the world, is because the people have to want it. And the people show that they want it by not only subscribing and buying tickets, but also by donating, saying, we want this here.
And that's the segue that I wanted to provide you, to give a phone number. If some way to reach you or your staff and say, I want to give $1 million.
Sure, we would love $1 million.
Or $1.
Or $1.
Right.
Sure. Our phone number is 207-947-6618. And Mary Budd is our executive director. Our box office is 942-3333, 207-942-3333, and our website is penobscottheater.org.
Whoa. Okay. What would be the best single phone number for people to call?
You can call any of those numbers, but you can speak to me. To me at
947-6618.
Okay.
Yeah. It's when you hear a lot of numbers like that, sometimes saying, I want to give, but I can't remember all those numbers.
Uh-huh.
So one good phone number. Ben, what's the future for you as an actor?
My immediate future is to hop into Wonderful Life, and I believe finishing out the season on stage, and just continuing to look for the opportunities that come my way through our own company. I mean, really, my future is more certain as an educator, in my opinion, in the building, but also just continuing with Penobscot Theater Company. I'm in love with the company and the building, and I have been for a good long time now, and I hope to stay and keep growing in that community.
Is there a character in a play that you've always wanted to play?
Yes, Sweeney Todd.
Now that's interesting. That's interesting.
No, I have a list. I think most actors do.
Okay, have we got a phone call too? Just okay. All right. No, Barry, for you as a director, is there a show that you've always wanted to do? that's top of your list?
You know, I don't know. I'm like probably one of the few directors that totally doesn't work like that. I have never had a list like that, mostly because I also work like so much as a producer that I turn myself on by what is going to feed a community at a right time and in the right space. And so for me, I'm looking forward to producing It's a Wonderful Life. Yeah. This was an interesting play, like purely from a nerdy director standpoint, in that I thought it was a play about sharp movement, but it turns out that it's a play about flowing movement because it's a memory play. And so strictly from like nerdy director standpoint, like that's been really interesting. And that was something that when I went to New York a couple of weeks and saw the Madonna concert, as well as some Broadway plays, some musicals, I was really interested in sharp movement versus flowing movement. And didn't really make the connection between my interest there and this particular play until we had all the elements in place, lighting and projections and actors, et cetera.
There is, I don't know how recent it is, but there is statistics out there that something like 2% of the people in this country have ever walked inside a legitimate theater. How do you, as a company that represents a community, encourage that growth in within your community?
Well, people who have never been to Penobscot Theater Company are always welcome to give our box office a call and say that they would like to come. I feel like it costs the theater every time there's an empty seat. The theater is for everyone. It's not an institution. Students are always welcome. We have $10 tickets for every single show, which is less than going to the movies. Mm-hmm. And subscribers are always welcome to bring a friend for free, someone who they've never, who's never experienced our particular theater before. We have student matinees. We go into the schools ourselves. But yeah, the theater is for everyone. It is not a fully government-supported institution, although of course we do get some support, which we apply for from our city and our state. So we can't just open the doors every day. We have to, it's an art form that deserves to be paid for, you know, too. We would love to have people who've never come before and they are welcome. They can give us a call at our box office.
So Dr. Cerberus is running, what's the dates?
It closes on November 8th and we run, Wednesdays through Sundays.
And just in the minute we have left, the season, just review it for us quickly.
Sure. Next up is It's a Wonderful Life. We start rehearsal the day after this closes, Dr. Cerberus closes. And I hope as many people as possible come to Dr. Cerberus. It's a unique experience that you probably won't have anywhere else. After It's a Wonderful Life, we do the world premiere of Travis Barker's Hair Frenzy, set in a small town in Maine. Really fun play. Then the beautiful musical, The Last 5 Years, an entirely sung love story that goes back and forth through a relationship. One person beginning the relationship and one person ending the relationship. And then we close the season with Duck Hunter Shoots Angel before we do our surprise 7th production of the main premiere of Rock of Ages.
And I want to thank Barry Newman, who's the producing artistic director of the Penobscot Theater, and Ben Lehman, who is going to be the actor you watch for when you come see the show, because he's going to steal the show. And this is Maine Arts Alive, and thank you to our engineer, Amy Brown, and to all of you. Have the best day you can. Bye.